Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help you on your quest to a satisfied mind. Today, Dave and I are talking about the big story, the expansive story, yet personal story. That is what we call the Bible.
Well, you know, the God story is what I've kind of boiled it down to, because it really is all about God's story. And, you know, he's chosen this as his primary way of getting our attention. And it makes sense if you were looking for something that was transcultural, that could go all the way across the centuries, why wouldn't you choose story? Just because of the nature of humanity.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the Bible, we tend to talk about it as being two stories, the New Testament and the Old Testament. And yet it's really just one story.
Well, that's an interesting thing. This dawned on me early on in my study days. I thought, wait a minute, it doesn't say Old Testament in the Old Testament. It doesn't say New Testament in the New Testament. It's a man-made designation. There is one Testament. It's the Testament of the living God telling us about our origins and about who he is.
Okay, so you make kind of a big deal about this. What's the big deal about it? What's the difference if we call it the Old Testament or the New Testament?
I find that there's a lot of dichotomizing that happens in our culture, and just because we're human beings. And so the idea that I watch people pit the Old and the New Testament against each other. And, you know, the harmony that the scriptures are put together with is just so refreshing and so helpful to mankind. So if we miss that harmony, we really miss the context of the God story, and that impacts our lives.
I think one of the things I've noticed too is that we tend to think, well, grace took over in the New Testament, and the Old Testament is done because Jesus fulfilled the law. I think what I have come to kind of figure out, it's in the language. What fulfilled meant then and how we use it now are two different ways. I think we use fulfilled now like, I fulfilled my duties. I'm done. I'm moving on. And we use that term, and then we talk about the Old Testament. We're done. We're moving on to grace. Like, there's some great stories back there, but nothing that really has anything to do with my life today, rather than looking at it like he completed it, Now we're just finishing the story. We're not casting something away.
Well, one of the passages that comes to mind is he makes it really clear. I didn't come to abolish the law. I came to fulfill it. And what's interesting about that is because he's the fulfillment of it, he also shows us the woven nature of the scriptures. I mean, Genesis doesn't start with Moses and with the law. It starts with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The book of Revelation ends with the end of time, at least time as we know it, and everything in between. So I think to understand Jesus and what Jesus taught, you really need to see it in the context of the one story, the meta story, the big story that's revealed in the scriptures.
And even in all this that we've just talked about, I want to clarify too that we don't believe that people are supposed to live by the law. It's just that what we're saying is that it's not just now not important.
Well, I mean, take for instance, I mean, the Ten Commandments, which were the linchpins of the law of Moses, what would it do to the American culture right now, let alone the world culture, if we just followed the Ten Commandments? Mm-hmm. It's because they're eternal. They're reflective of the nature of who God is and what God is doing and how God has chosen to deliver people from our struggles and our troubles.
So the big story is, it's so cool. There are so many amazing stories within this. And what I have to realize, though, I have to be careful using the word story, because it makes it seem like it's a fairy tale. Yeah, rather than it's my heritage, it's my history, it's the history of mankind, it's his story. I mean, all of that, just I have to be careful not to look at it like those are stories as though they might not be for real.
Well, one of the big questions of life is, is there a God, and has he spoken? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that the scriptures make pretty clear, is that in that story, and he's chosen story to use as a vehicle for that, he has spoken. In fact, I was looking at this passage. It's in Hebrews 1. It's one of my favorites. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers in the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom he also made the world. Now that is expansive and sweeping when you're talking about how God has worked in the story.
Kind of easy to forget that Jesus was there
When the world was created. Yeah. Well, because of the incarnation and how the incarnation is taught, the coming of Jesus in human form, sometimes that connection is not made very well by our teachers. And I think part of it is we just can't contemplate the idea that
that
eternal God would become man. And yet that is the story of the God story.
But I love this whole history of mankind. You know, God shows us in the Word his love, his faithfulness, his long-suffering, and then ultimately, toward the end of the New Testament, the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. But then at the very end, the future. And it's like everything wrapped up into one, this wonderful story, the long-suffering, the love, the grace that's wrapped in all of it. But there's still a future. That's just... it's a hope, but we actually have a future. This is not going to end.
Well, and the beautiful thing about the Bible is that it's all about people. And it's one person or group of people after another, and it's people stories because people stories are what the world is all about. In fact, mm-hmm. I have a sense that when we do get to heaven, when that happens, a story will be a huge part because it's so reflective of the personalness of God and really meaning in the journey of life.
Well, just think of all the times that we're with friends or that you know of friends being with friends. It's the story. I mean, you all have... experiences, and you tell each other about them in the form of stories. I mean, that's how we relate. It's not just in our kindness, but it's in the remembering the kindnesses or the remembering the laughs or those stories are part of just our legacy and our heritage of who we are.
Well, and in the God story, it's interesting, there have been a lot of people who have lived since the dawn of time, but God chose these specific stories.
I love that.
Whether it's Adam or Noah or Abraham or Isaac or Jacob or Joseph, you go all the way through the scriptures, and those are the ones that God chose because he wanted to explain to us and represent to us the importance of our story in the context of other human stories so that we could not only just hear a good story,
right,
but we could see where we fit into that story.
But I like a good story.
Yeah, and from a principal perspective, you do. You read a lot of books.
Well, the whole thing too about the Word, about how incredibly constructed it is. And I remember one of the first times I really studied the Old Testament. I went through, it was with you, with the Institute, we called it at the time, and went through Genesis all the way to Revelation. But it was my first time of ever really studying from Genesis to the end of the Old Testament and how good that was for me. One of the things I realized was, and these are my words, I don't know if anybody else would exactly describe it like this, but I look at the New Testament, lots of times they talk about a principle, like don't be deceitful, mm-hmm. and don't live impurely. But the Old Testament is filled with stories,
yes,
that you see how it works when someone does it right, and you see the consequences of when they are deceitful.
I remember when I was studying Abraham at one point, and I thought, I'm going to make a graph of Abraham's life. Because, when it dawned on me that Abraham was kind of a dirtbag,
yeah,
when it came to how he treated people. So I made an Abraham graph, or an Aber graph, I called it, and a Lotto graph. And Lot just kind of starts here and goes
down. Yeah.
But Abraham's life is up and down on the graph of life. And yet, in the midst of all of it, his faith grows to the point where by the time he is willing to sacrifice Isaac, he's almost like a dead man walking, but mm-hmm. he's so full of life. But he's set himself aside, or God has allowed him to set himself aside. It's really a beautiful picture of spiritual life.
One of the stories that I remember is in studying about Jacob and Joseph and all of that was Reuben, and he was one of Joseph's brothers.
Yes.
And I can remember in a class
being... not a nice group, by the way,
no,
of siblings.
They weren't. But here's one of the things. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. When it says in 1 Peter, rid yourselves of all deceit. Okay, well, that sounds good, but it's easy to sort of redefine what deceit is, or define
Correct.
It how I want to define
Apparently,
it.
Apparently, it's real easy for people to do that.
Yeah, but when I looked at Reuben's life, and there's not much written about him, But he slept with his husband or his dad's concubine. Okay, that's just one verse. It just slips in there.
Right.
You go, oh, okay, I saw that. But then later he shows up like he's going to stick up for Joseph. When the brothers want to put Joseph into the, kill him and put him into the cistern, he says, no, let's not kill him. Let's just put him into the cistern. He was thinking he would go back and rescue him later.
Yes.
What happened was, is the boys, the other brothers, sold him. But even then, when they went to talk to the dad, he was in on the deception. He didn't come forward and say, that's not what happened.
A lot of peer pressure there.
Yeah, there was peer pressure. But just, you know, it doesn't say anywhere in the recounting of that story anything about deceit. But when you get to the New Testament, it talks about don't be deceitful. Rid yourselves of all deceit. And my point is, there's the principle, but back in the Old Testament is an example of
demonstrated.
A demonstration of exactly what that means.
I heard this quote once, and I think about it often as I'm looking at the Bible and looking at life. The Bible is not a book that man would write if he could, or would write if he could write if he would. So the whole idea is that why in the world would we write such an unflattering story about ourselves? Mm-hmm. So it's really, the beautiful thing about the Bible is it has been constructed by God and delivered to us so that we can get an accurate picture of who he is and who we are.
And I know I keep going back to this Reuben thing, but one of the things that's encouraging to me about it is that, and what you said about Abraham and Lot, how their lives go up and down, or they just start out well and then they plummet, or there's just deception, you know, all the way through. One of the things I love about that is to see how God is faithful and long-suffering. And when I look at my life, I can really accentuate the weaknesses instead of accentuating God. And some of those stories are just really good for me to remind me that God is looking at my whole life, but he's the one that rescues me and is redeeming me, has redeemed me, and the whole part of me, because even my good stuff isn't great stuff.
Right.
Not compared to his purity.
That's so true. As I think about the God story and what it means to me on a personal basis, kind mm-hmm. of a day by day basis, I've struggled with the whole idea of, am I following something that's just old fashioned, or, you know, because they're old stories. They're not just. It's not like singing a hymn from the 1800s or whatever. That's kind of old fashioned. And I've got a lot of them that I really like. But this is believing something that goes all the way back to the dawn of time. So it's transcultural, and in that sense, the Bible is timeless. And that's one of the reasons why it was constructed the way that it was over a period of a couple of thousands of years of experiences and of people and different cultures, because it's totally transcultural, and I can count on it to not be old-fashioned. It's timeless. Mm-hmm. And I love that about the scriptures.
So when you think about just, you know, you mentioned Abraham or you mentioned Lot, what's one of your highlights of, I don't know, I don't even want to say the whole Bible, because where would you start? Let's just start with Abraham. What's one of your highlights that you got out of doing that Abraham, your Abragraph?
I think it was the recognition that he was just a man like I am. And so he makes me hopeful, because he makes me hopeful that when God's at work in somebody's life, he keeps working. Mm-hmm. And it isn't like we have to achieve some level of perfection in order for God to continue to work with us. He's already working with imperfect humanity, and he keeps on rolling with us and keeps showing us his kindness. And that's one of the things that Abraham does for me.
Yeah, I find that really encouraging too, because not only did he lie and say that his wife was his sister, he actually did that more than once.
Hey, awesome spending a little bit of time with you today. Fourthstream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. And if you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to fourthstream.com and click on that radio button up in the masthead. Hey, Bernadette, thanks for joining me today. It's fun to do this with you.
You're welcome. And it's your life. Engage.